and mighty fortress is our God, that safe place, that refuge. Culture Wars is a strange name for this morning, but whenever we look at the passage here, and again, if I could have my laptop, that would be great. Thanks, Johnny. Very quickly, just as we begin to think, no sad dad jokes this morning, but just Psalm 5, what does it say to us? What's it about? And maybe to help with that, what is its context? Here we understand that it comes after Psalm 2, 3, 4, 5, but Psalm 3 and 4, and the kind of scholars think Psalm 5 as well, is at the time when there was basically civil war in David's household. His son Absalom was trying to take the throne off him and had twisted and turned all sorts of ways, sown all sorts of stories against his dad and the family, and actually was hounding his father, trying to kill him. So civil war had broken out. The context is David's life is in chaos and his family is in strife. What's the content of the psalm? The psalm, where last week we were in four sections, this week we're in five sections. And the first section and the third section and the fifth section are actually prayer from the very bottom of David's boots, crying out to God for help in the context that he's in, that his family is in chaos and strife. There's request. Then there's actually the rebellious live like this, but Lord, I don't want to do that. I want to live in reverence. Then there's the rebuke that comes to those who live against the Lord. And then there's those verses at the end, which are just beautiful, about finding our refuge in the Lord. Again, the scholars would say, excuse me, this is a morning psalm. A couple of times I don't do very well with morning psalms. But this is a morning psalm. Lord, in the morning I bring my requests to you. This is also an imprecatory psalm, which is a big fancy word that basically says, Lord, just bring your justice and vengeance against those who despise you and those who do not follow your ways. It's uncomfortable reading in some sense, but we'll get there in a bit. So the content, a morning psalm, an imprecatory psalm, looking for God's justice and vengeance on those who are causing harm. And then there are five sections. But maybe most important for you and I is, how does it connect to you and me today? What's the preacher's so what? What does this say to me today in my context? What of this content do I need to hear that will connect to me? One of the little books that I'm using is by a chap called Dale Ralph Davis. And he says this, in this psalm, David teaches us to pray when we are in dangerous and lousy circumstances. Folks, I don't know what your dangerous and lousy circumstances might be today, but for each face that's here in church, we have a story. And so whatever our circumstances, what does the Lord want to say to us through these words? Because we can pick them up and the principles apply for you and I. It starts off verses 1 through to 3, as Patty has read for us. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my sighing. Listen to my cry for help, my King and my God. For to you I pray. In the morning, O Lord, you hear my voice. In the morning I lay my requests before you, and I wait in expectation. Prayerfulness. David comes before God in those circumstances, praying for his help. Verse 1 is just a plea. Give ear to my words. Listen to my sighing. What's that about? The start of verse 2, listen to my cry for help. Dale Ralph Davis very interestingly says, spoken words and broken words. Lord, listen, give ear to my words. Listen to my cry for help, but at the same time, consider my sighing. Groans that words cannot express. Paul writes in Romans 8, 26 and 27, about the Spirit intercedes within us with groans that can't be understood, can't be put into words. In the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, and we do not know what we ought to pray, but the Spirit himself intercedes with us, for us, with groans that words cannot express. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit. And the Spirit intercedes for the saints in accordance with God's will. What is meant by consider my sighing? And if it's not too emotional or tender, for me and for the McCracken family, 26 years ago when my younger sister passed away with cancer, and we sat with her for 2 weeks in the hospital. Rosie, after time, could not speak, but she was groaning and she was sighing. And one of our friends, a minister who conducted Rosie's funeral, says, "Gordy, it's prayer. Consider my sighing." This, from the very bottom of your boots, when you can't put it into words, the Lord knows. Groans that words cannot express. Look at the second part of verse 2. David prays, "My King and my God." His request, his prayer, his plea is earthed in knowing his God. "You are my King and you are my God." Look at his persistence. Morning by morning. In the morning, I. He is persistent in his prayer. And then there's just this lovely, the bottom of verse 3. "I lay my requests before you and wait." And we would, and wait in expectation. We miss that. We don't fully get it. But it's actually earthed, folks, way back in Leviticus chapter 1. And actually the picture here is about the priests worshipping God in the temple or in the tabernacle. He is to skin the burnt offering and cut it into pieces. The sons of Aaron, the priest, are to put fire on the altar and arrange the wood on the fire. Then Aaron's sons, the priests, shall arrange the pieces, as in the meat, including the head and the fat, on the burnt wood that is on the altar. Eugene Peterson, again, always find him helpful. "I lay the pieces of my life on your altar and watch for the fire to descend." That little verse, "In the morning I lay my requests before you and wait in expectation," in the Hebrew, is taken from the Hebrew that gives the picture of laying your offering on the altar before God. Our prayers we lay before God and we wait in expectation. David's request, his prayerfulness. Then the picture changes, verse 4 through to 6. And there is a picture of God's holiness, but also man's rebelliousness in here. Again, just for health's sake, just it's good to kind of catch it here, keep it fresh. "You are not a God who takes pleasure in evil. With you the wicked cannot dwell. The arrogant cannot stand in your presence. You hate all who do wrong. You destroy those who tell lies. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men the Lord abhors." Hold the phone. What's going on here? Here, David, again from the depths of his boots, is, "Lord, you are holy, and look at the way people are living before you." Verse 4, "With you the wicked cannot dwell, because you're a God of purity." We'll keep going. "Pride, the arrogant, cannot stand before you." You see, again, David knows the God to whom he's praying. And with you the wicked cannot dwell. The arrogant cannot stand in your presence, Lord. And then verses 5, the second part of verse 5 and 6. Punishment. Punishment. Thinking, hang on a wee minute. Again, just to read that, to keep it fresh. The arrogant cannot stand in your presence. You hate all who do wrong. You destroy those who tell lies. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men, the Lord abhors. Folks, we again, I believe in our culture and this culture wars, we have become soft on sin. We have become soft on sin. And actually the anger that the Lord feels against sin, again, Dale Ralph Davis just has little four words, no tame God here. No tame God here. You hate the arrogant. I mean, hang on a wee minute. I remember, just to lighten the mood, Karen and I, lots and lots of years ago, Jersey Street City Mission Hall, this must be 1987, we had just left Bible College where we had met and married, and we'd gone to work with the Belfast City Mission. We were placed in Jersey Street for a wee while. And there was a prayer meeting one night, and it was the same night as the boyos broke out of the maize prison. So some of you will maybe remember that. And we're sitting in the prayer meeting in a big circle, and the next thing, somebody in the prayer prays about these boys who had escaped from the prison, and somebody else in the group went, "Slay them, Lord, slay them." I'm thinking, okay. But folks, that is the sense here. These people are so rebellious towards God, we feel angry about it. We feel angry about it. Slay them, Lord. Slay them. No tame God here. Punishment is called. If you jump across in Psalm 3, verse 7, "Arise, Lord, deliver me, O my God." Amen. Amen. And then the verse continues, "Strike all my enemies on the jaw, break the teeth of the wicked." What? Lord, give them a good dig in the jaw. Break their teeth. Do we feel like that about sin and rebellion before God today? Need to keep moving. How do we deal with this, folks? Strike all my enemies in the jaw and break the teeth of the wicked. Lord, punish them for their rebellion, for they don't live in holiness. Do you know the little quote in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Aslan is a lion, the Lion of Judah, who we've just been singing about. The great lion. "Oh," said Susan, "I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion." "Safe?" said Mrs. Beaver. "Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king." And C.S. Lewis in the Chronicles of Narnia writes this picture of God as the Aslan figure. And of course he's not safe. He's a roaring lion seeking for people to devour. I know that's the Peter picture in 1 Peter, but he is a lion. He's not safe. He's the God of justice and judgment and strength and power and might. And sometimes we're just a bit soft. And so we come before the Lord in reverence. Let's keep going. I'm getting carried away here. Where's David's place here? Reverence and righteousness before God. "I, by your mercy, come into your house, Lord. I come before you to worship you. My position in reverence, I will bow down." The picture on screen, you'll not be able to read the small writing, but it's a very early Matt Redman album, and it's just simply called "The Friendship and the Fear." I think that's really healthy, that we come into friendship with the one who is the lover of our souls, But we also come with fear, as in holy, healthy fear, as we come to worship the one who is great and awesome and mighty, the Aslan picture, the friendship and the fear. And then verse 8, lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness. Make straight your paths for me, says David. Lord, my request as I come before you is that you would intercede and intervene in my life and all the pressures and struggles. And I come before you into your house. I bow before you in reverence in my heart, and I ask for your direction in my life. And then the picture changes again. Verses 9 and 10. Not a word from their mouth can be trusted. We're back to the wicked. Their heart is filled with destruction. Their throat is an open grave. And with their tongue they speak deceit. Declare them guilty, O God. Let the intrigues be their intrigues be their downfall. Banish them for their many sins, for they have rebelled against you. These two verses are rebuke. Again, one of the other commentators, Michael Wilcox, again helpfully says, the bad heart has bad effects and comes to a bad end. If we live in this rebellion before God, a bad heart has bad effects and comes to a bad end. Very quickly, very start, not a word from their mouth can be trusted, deceit. Their heart is filled with destruction, death. Their throat is an open grave, deceit again. With their tongues they speak deceit. Downfall, let their intrigues be their downfall. Disobedience. Why? Well, for they have rebelled against you. They have rebelled against you. A bad heart has bad effects and comes to a bad end. If we live ignoring God and his ways, eventually it will catch up on us. Our deceitfulness and the rebuke from God that we will hear, certainly for eternity. But I want to focus on verses 11 and 12 just as we finish. Verses 11 and 12 speak of refuge. But you'll welcome us with open arms when we run for cover to you. Folks, do you need to hear that today? Do you need to hear that today in your context, in your situation? But you'll welcome us with open arms when we run for cover to you, Lord. Verse 11, second part, David writes, spread your protection over them. Verse 12, surround them as with a shield. Surround them as with a shield. And again, all the commentators say here, this isn't a picture of a little round personal shield, you know, going into battle, a little kind of small thing. The picture here in the Hebrew, I'm told, I'm reading, is a big, huge, rectangular shield that's the size of a door, that's kind of rounded so it covers you. That is the picture of God's refuge, God's protection over us as we come before him. A large rectangular shield like a door, says Warren Wiersbe. Folks, this is our God. What is your context this morning? What are the circumstances of your life where you need to hear some of these words? And maybe the wicked are coming against you, as David's written in section 2 and section 4 here in this psalm. What's the content that you need to hear? What's the connection to you? For this psalm, as we said at the beginning, Dale Ralph Davis says, this psalm, David teaches us to pray when we are in dangerous and lousy circumstances. But just as we finish, go home with this truth and this thought. But the Lord will welcome us with open arms when we run for cover to him.